humbly and gratefully accept your nomination for the presidency of the United States. I will present the facts plainly and honestly. But here at our convention, there will be no lies. We will honor the American people with the truth and nothing else. It is time to show the whole world that America is back, bigger and better and stronger than ever before.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Well, just when you thought you were ready to OD on politics, we're going to bring you a little bit more today and a little bit more next week as well. Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09 and it is Friday. It's July 22nd, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell and welcome to another business day, the final business day of the week. And what a day it is. Lots going on today. The wrap-up of the Republican convention last night, the Democratic convention coming up. There's indication that today we might actually get some word about when Hillary Clinton will name her running mate. There are some reports that she may do that as early as this afternoon, but possibly tomorrow. And we'll continue to follow those developments as we move through the morning as well. But right now, let's get you caught up on the latest business news from the WGN Market Desk. Markets this morning generally mixed around the world. In Europe, in London, the FTSE 100 is off. The DAX is off this morning. In France, the numbers are down as well. In Asia, generally, the numbers are lower as well, too, but not by big numbers. The Dow futures are pointing upwards this morning, up about 12 points. The S&P futures and NASDAQ futures are higher as well today. There is some news happening around the world we want to get to you. The Wall Street numbers yesterday, we saw them cool off a bit. Some disappointing earnings reports from companies, including Intel. Stocks took a break from their winning streak. The major indices falling into the red on some disappointing news. Joe Hyder is president of Cirrus Wealth Management, and he says,
"Always going to be breathers on the way up. It's never a straight line in either direction."
In other words, what goes up must come down. General Motors did boost its full-year outlook yesterday. It reported a record quarter, second-quarter profit, but many of the other companies, not so much. Yesterday, shares of Starbucks were decent, but they missed Wall Street expectations. As you know, Starbucks has been pushing a higher price for its coffee. The company posted third-quarter earnings of 49 cents a share, $5.2 billion in revenue. Analysts had expected the chain to post about 49 cents on a share of $5.33 billion, so a little off there. Chipotle Grill was actually one of the bright spots after the trouble it's been through. Its shares rose despite its earnings miss yesterday. That's because the trend seems to be upwards. The company has instituted a loyalty program with buy one, basically get a point or two, and then you get a free burrito after several. So that's something that Wall Street likes. Boeing Company, the Chicago-based Boeing Company, second quarter results will include more than $2 billion in charges related to the 787, 747, and KC-46 tanker aircraft programs. That company said yesterday that it is not expecting a good next quarter. Boeing shares fell about 1% after hours, so we'll be watching that stock as well today. Let's bring in Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management. He's with us every Friday to go over some of what we've just heard, the economic news from the week, where our portfolio stands. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you again.
Well, good to have you with us on this Friday. Hopefully you're staying cool. Did you pick out any news from the week that was positive that we could move forward on?
Well, you know, really the markets have been on a tear. We're up with yesterday's decline. Prior to that, we've been up 9 days in a row. Now, mind you, they've been modest gains because the market essentially after yesterday's small decline back where it was a week ago. Investors, I think, are increasingly getting comfortable with the fact that the world is not collapsing around them. Brexit is somewhere out in that future, the U.S. economy is not going into a recession, and with the lower interest rates that we have in the bond market, investors have been focused on trying to get something for their money, and they default to stocks.
I'll just mention Brexit briefly because I think most Americans have stopped paying attention to that. But in Great Britain, they're already seeing some results of this vote. Business climate surveys, business climate, actually current business climate, seems to be faltering, and they've not even made any big decisions yet.
No, and it's in anticipation of and worries about what might happen. So if my future is somewhat uncertain, it's not necessarily a binary decision here. There's a whole raft of different ways this can go. I'm gonna be very conservative in my approach to business, and that's what we're seeing not only in England, but we're starting to see it a little bit in different pockets within Europe.
I was happy to see the home sales numbers yesterday. Home resales hit their highest level in nearly 9.5 years. As somebody whose nest egg is pretty much my home right now, I love seeing that.
Yeah, and that has been one of the bright spots for the economy coming out of the recession. Housing has been very slow to recover. If you look at the housing stock, if you will, how many new houses are being built and that type of thing, we're well below where we normally have been. And then when you look at housing prices and you go back to the 70s, they've generally increased at a 2-3% annual clip. And then we had that big bubble and the collapse. Well, we're back to that trend line of about 2-3% per year if you extrapolate forward that long-term trend. So I think housing is okay. I'm not anticipating that we're going to wind up in another housing recession. So I think, again, housing is back to what passes for normal and back to long-term trends.
Our morning conversation this morning with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management.
From ABC News Wall Street Now, what goes up? Investors finally broke their long string of advances yesterday, the Dow Jones closing down 78 points to 18,517. The NASDAQ was off 16 points. The S&P 500 was nearly 8 points lower. Crude oil fell $1.20 to $44.55 a barrel. Gasoline prices have stayed at their lowest in 12 years, even though the summer driving season is in full swing. A major reason is Saudi Arabia's decision to dip into its oil inventories to dampen production in other countries. Home sales saw their fourth straight monthly gain in June and their highest level in more than 9 years. Sales of existing homes rose just over 1% as buyers make offers on the tight supply of available homes and home prices continue to rise. Chipotle Mexican Grill is still struggling to win customers back after a series of food safety scares. Sales at stores open at least a year fell 24% last quarter compared with the same period in 2015. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 520, and we're on with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. He is really our portfolio manager, our experts here that we talk with every Friday about the economy, where we should be putting our money. Paul, I want to go back to the housing numbers, if we could, for just a moment. And one of the questions I got this week was about that. There were so many recommendations, this person said, to not be a homeowner anymore and to move away from that. And I think that had to do with all of the bad pricing that we saw back a few years ago. The question is this still a good investment if that's what their money is, they want to use their money for?
Well, you have to live somewhere. so you're either going to pay rent or you're going to pay a mortgage. And it really comes down to lifestyle, size of your place and what you want to do and cash flow. So I think what you're starting to see now is we've seen since really the last 4 years or so, housing prices have picked up. They're back to and moving along a historical trend line of 2-3%. Where housing has a big advantage, there's two big advantages that housing has over a rental property. One is a tax deduction on the interest that you're paying. And two is you can use leverage to your advantage. With interest rates extremely low right now, you can get a mortgage for 3.5%, maybe 4% or so. And our expectation is that over the long run, over a 30-year period, you should, net of your tax savings, see a better rate of return in other investments. So housing, I think, does still make a lot of sense, but it really comes down to personal preference and personal cash flows.
Give us a sense of when you go over portfolios, is 2% a good return?
You know, in this environment, over the last 3 years or so, 2% is not all that bad. You could be doing a little bit better, but again, we're in a very low rate environment and a low equity return environment because valuations are so high. So it's our expectations that certainly that 2 to 4% range is not out of the question. But again, is that 2% going forward, I think is probably a reasonable return, like I said, that 2 to 4% range.
Well, we talked earlier about the Wall Street going gangbusters. Stock market generally this week has been on a tear, as you said, but we saw these earnings come out this week, late this week, yesterday especially, that made the market take a hit. My question, I guess, would be, are those still safe stocks like the Starbucks, the Intel, Visa, IBM, those, or are there others that we might move our money toward?
You know, what's interesting is we've talked about, again, investing in those safe areas, utilities, consumer staples, et cetera, and they have been on a very big run. Utilities are up close to 20% for the year, which is just huge for a really non-growth type of industry, but it's investors running for that yield. And valuations there are very, very high. We're starting to see and we're starting to rotate our portfolios a little bit away from those areas. And the two parts of the markets that have really been beaten up and have kind of suffered here over the last year or so have been healthcare and technology. So those are areas that have those same types of characteristics, good revenue growth, good earnings, good dividends, and dividend growth. But I think investors are a little bit nervous about the upcoming election for healthcare. And technology is still very much a wild card for a lot of investors.
And the healthcare aspect of this, too, there was some news this week about Anthem here in Illinois. There were some other states, too, that are dealing still with the fallout of Obamacare. And some of these companies are going out of business, or they're at least suffering big time in terms of revenue and projections of revenue, right?
Absolutely. But the parts of the market that we take a look at are more of what I would call the consumer-related parts of the market, and those would be the drug companies, what I euphemistically call the body parts manufacturers, so those that are manufacturing artificial knees and joints and so on. There continues to be a pretty good demand for those types of products, and certainly as we see all of us getting older and using them a lot more, there seems to be a pretty good floor for the revenue and earnings for those companies.
And airline stock, too, seems all of the airlines that have reported, United and Delta, in the past week have put together third quarter revenue projections that are quite lower than this quarter and even more than the first quarter. How about those stocks?
You know, I have always struggled with airlines. And they have changed their business model. We all fly. We know that, you know, there's a fee now for checking your bag and so on. They've got the surcharge for energy on the tickets as well. But the business model for an airplane, if I go from Chicago to Houston and there's only 10 people on that flight, the airline's losing money on that flight. Now, the airlines have gotten smart in the recent past in the fact that they're not flying as many flights or out of as many different locations, so the flights tend to be very full. But there is a cap, if you will, on how much revenue they're going to be able to generate based on how many flights they have and the number of planes in their fleet. So I've always struggled, and we really have never historically invested in airline stocks. It's a business model that is much shorter term than what we're comfortable with.
Well, now to the elephant in the room, literally and figuratively. Did you get to see Donald Trump last night?
I tried to avoid that. I generally will sit back and take a look once we get through next week, start to take a look at what they're starting to talk about when they're on the campaign trail and some of the platforms that they're putting forward. So I tend to stay away from the night of, only because that tends to be a lot more theater and not enough substance.
As I peruse some of the business papers this morning, the writers, business people are saying they heard much of the same, just a little bit more quiet tone from him last night. And I think the worst I've seen is Fortune, maybe it's Fortune or maybe it's The Economist, said that he would absolutely wreck our economy, and they're very concerned about it from a business standpoint still.
I think, you know, if you look at how he has handled things historically, and I've seen some of the different analysis done on what a Trump president might be from a business perspective, it would be very, in the short run, very good for the U.S. economy, because he would very much be very willing to spend money, take on additional debt, and do all these different projects. You know, the joke around, of course, is, you know, building this wall down between the U.S. and Mexico, but that's his MO at this point, and from an economic perspective, that's not a bad thing. The drawback is you are going to take on additional debt to do that. At some point, you're going to have to pay the piper. So it could be a short-term positive, but a longer-term negative for the U.S. economy.
And next week's Hillary's turn, so we will give her due diligence next week, I guess, when we talk.
Absolutely.
All right, Paul, have a great weekend. Good talking with you.
Much.
It's Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, our portfolio manager here on The Opening Bell.
From ABC News Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, athletes on the video game field.
No stoppage, play on for Real Madrid, says the ref.
Video games like FIFA, Madden Football, and NBA 2K have been around forever, but only now is esports really exploding like nobody has seen before, with companies coming out with all kinds of accessories like special headsets just for esports and competition. Jennifer Day is with Sony.
Competition amongst gamers is extremely important. The genre is growing a lot.
There are esports associations now, and while gamers might fancy themselves to be athletes, it's all virtual. They have skill, but skill in the form of a controller in their hand.
Tons of popular sports channels, like traditional sports channels, now turning attention to esports.
In fact, many of the big video game companies like Electronic Arts and Activision are now trying to figure out the best way to venture into esports and to make money off of it. EA recently putting up big prize money. With Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 5:39 as we move toward the end of the show here, moving up toward the top of the hour. Our discussion, our morning business conversation, still focusing a little bit on politics today. And Heather Long of CNN Money is with us, by Heather Long on Twitter. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning. Lots to digest on that front.
There is. And I'd like to start first just with one thing that I noticed. There was, I think, one a gay person who spoke and one Silicon Valley person who spoke. And I think they were the same people, the head of PayPal, Mr. Thiel. Let's listen to what he had to say here if we have this audio queued up.
I think the corporate.
No,
I think the
we don't have him. Wait, let's see if I can get him here. But anyway, he was here he is. Here he is.
Of course, every American has a unique identity. I am proud to be gay. I am proud to be a Republican. But most of all, I am proud to be an American.
Peter Thiel, the head of PayPal at the RNC last night, giving one of the last speeches. One of the few real big business people I saw there. What about you? Did you see anybody big?
Well, other than some very long-time conservatives. So Harold Hamm, kind of the billionaire of the energy sector, spoke the night before. But you're right, it's been noticeably quiet how few typical business people were in Cleveland. Certainly it's been noted that a lot of Wall Street, which is normally very friendly with the Republican Party, didn't even send anyone big to Cleveland, didn't really send their lobbyists. So you're right. It was noticeable how that was the typical image of Republican Party of business that big business was not there.
And really going out of their way, too, to sort of ring the alarm bell again. A couple of articles this week I saw, one of them that was in The Economist, where they're just predicting the end of the world, basically, if Trump is elected. And I know you've been writing about this as well. Is there some place in the middle where this is at, or is it really that much doom and gloom?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. So last night, we've heard some hints from the campaign. Some of his economic advisors came out earlier this week and noted that they personally are in favor of things like NAFTA and free trade, more, you know, with some stipulations that we have to fire back if countries are really not doing what they're supposed to and not keeping up their side of agreements. And so I was really interested to see what Trump was going to say on trade last night. And he left no doubt in anyone's mind, you know, that he's going to build that wall with Mexico. And that from day one, he said, you know, trade, renegotiating trade deals was going to be a top priority for him. So I was wondering to see if there would be any shift, any lessening of rhetoric, and there wasn't last night. If anything, it was the opposite. He was dialing up, doubling down on, yes, you know, NAFTA was a huge mistake. We should not be negotiating and being a part of any sort of Pacific trade deal to try to isolate China. You know, he really blamed trade for, again, for losses of millions of American jobs. And so I think those types of policies do. They make business and they make economists really, really nervous about what that could possibly cause a trade war, possibly throw the United States into a recession.
And I heard one of his advisors saying, well, the wall was sort of a euphemism for we're just going to, you know, be strong on immigration. But even that alone, if you go through with your plan to deport all of those people, that's going to be very, very expensive. So wall or mass deportations, it's still going to be very, very expensive. I'm curious to see, you know, if the reaction is going to be any less today from any of this. I think I heard one person say, yeah, it was sort of the same policies, just less yelling by Donald Trump and, you know, more focused to the point of some of his crazy policies. Is that something that we're not likely to hear from the Democrats now as we switch to their party?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting what the Democrats have. Certainly, we're not going to hear the same tone on immigration. I'm glad you brought up immigration when we look CNN did the analysis of the speech. That was actually the biggest section. So we spent the most time talking about immigration, both in terms of reiterating how he thinks that's unsafe. He talked a lot about crimes that he feels that illegal immigrants have committed. So, again, the overriding message of not just the economics and sort of the physicality of taking illegal immigrants and trying to deport them and trying to stop illegal immigration by building the wall or whatever, but also really painting this as a dangerous situation and a very physical level. And you're right. It's interesting. I was thinking about it. The other thing that we normally hear from Democrat or from Republicans is a lot of talk on taxes. And there was basically one line of Trump saying, hey, I'm going to lower everybody's taxes, both for businesses and individuals. But they're really, you're right, there really was not the usual talk on taxes and on trying to be better about having a balanced budget in Washington. If there's a lot of fear, as you're saying, another kind of strike against Donald Trump's economic policies is that so far his tax plan is the most expensive out there. And so he's going to add a lot of money to the deficit. He was blaming Obama for nearly doubling the debt of the United States since he's been in office. And people were sort of saying, wait a minute, but your own plans could also very, very realistically do that.
One of the lines that stood out to me was when he said, I've made myself rich and I'm going to make America rich again. And you've written a piece this week about how, you know, those stock markets at a record high, unemployment's low. We've seen all this hiring, wages even seem to be going up. There's a disconnect there, isn't there? I mean, it seems like if I'm going into the voting booth, I'm not doing too bad, not doing worse than I was 4 years ago, probably a lot better than 8 years ago.
Definitely. And you're right. That's why if you look at kind of traditional election models and election prediction models, that's why a number of those models are pointing towards a Democratic and a Hillary Clinton win. It's because the economy does look good. I mean, I keep using the line, it's good but not great. But certainly when people look around, just as you're saying, they admit, hey, most of me and most of my family and most of my neighbors are better off than we were 4 or 8 years ago. That's hard to deny. Now, I've also been writing about, and Steve, you and I have talked about it a lot, I call it like the low self-esteem or low esteem economy, in the sense that people are still really nervous about pocketbook. Like, even though they say, okay, I have a job, you know, I'm earning a salary again, they're still really anxious and nervous. And that's, I think, for two reasons. One is, looking back, just coming through that Great Recession, it's like a recession hangover. You know, the middle class got hit the hardest during the Great Recession. Huge loss of wealth, huge plummet of home values. And I think people are right to kind of say, whoa, if another recession hits, who's going to be hurt again the most? And so there, I think there's legitimate fear, anxiety, that I wasn't prepared for the last recession, and I really don't feel like I've had enough time to save up and kind of get in a better place for when the next one hits. And then I think the other thing is, when you kind of look forward and you say, okay, well, what's really going to help me going forward? There is a lot of anxiety about things like robots replacing jobs. And, you know, again, who's that going to hit first? Going to hit the middle, and kind of the blue-collar workers will be the first to be hit by that robot revolution. So yeah, I think there's still a lot of anxiety and some justification for that anxiety, yeah, even though things are much better now.
Right, even though people are generally, feeling one way or the other about this election, it generally comes down to the pocketbook on the day they actually go into the poll. Heather Long, CNN Money, lots of good stories there, by the way. The other one we don't have time to get to, but people are generally happier at work, too, according to a new survey. So head over to CNN Long and read some of Heather Long's work this week. Good stuff. Heather, thanks for being with us, as always.
Thanks.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. 5:52 as we continue on The Opening Bell on the WGN Market Desk this morning. The Dow future is pointing higher, up about 29. S&P NASDAQ futures higher as well. Looks like gold, silver trending downward. Crude oil up a little bit this morning. Let's get the latest on economy, on the commodities, rather, and more on some agriculture news this morning. Orion Samuelson is with us. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you from the desert one more time, where it's 91 degrees right now and going up to about 113 degrees today. By now, however, in the Midwest, we should begin to recognize that, barring a weather catastrophe between now and the end of the growing season, we are in for some bin-busting crops, because we've had ideal pollination weather over most of the Corn Belt. The next critical area will be rainfall in August, because the soybean crop is made in August. But yesterday we had some pretty good soybean export news yesterday, because new crop soybean export sales totaled a bigger than expected 1,002,000 tons. That's up from 547,000 tons a week earlier. So despite that, we did see the November soybeans ending up slightly yesterday, but corn futures fell for the third day in a row because of the crop development news across the Midwest. Livestock continues to be a bad picture for the cattle industry, because the cattle futures down to a five-year low yesterday. We're looking at a bigger supply of beef coming on the market. It means your steaks and hamburgers should be cheaper as you put them on the grill this summer. And August live cattle futures ended down $1.90 yesterday, down to $107.52. And cash cattle, that's those live cattle coming to market, Southern Plains, $115 to $116. That's down from last week's $117. And hog prices also trading lower, lowest level since April 26, as the August lean hog contract finished down $1.75 yesterday. Cash hog prices in the Midwest were 50 cents to a dollar lower. Comment on the first convention that's now over? I don't think I heard the word agriculture once. I know I did not hear it in Mr. Trump's speech last night. Not once was agriculture mentioned, and I'm positive I will not hear it next week in the Democratic convention, as somehow the two parties seem to forget the fact that the most basic, important industry in this country is agriculture, way beyond food. But without agriculture, we have no food to carry people on to all of the other activities and improvements that we have seen in technology and everything else. So I certainly can't agree with Mr. Trump on his trade policies, because NAFTA, that went into place back in the late 1990s, has been a success for American agriculture. If we do away with these ag trade agreements, we'll have to shut down half the farms and ranches in the U.S., but doesn't surprise me that we have made food so available and affordable that people just kind of take it for granted.
Well, and Orrin, let me ask you this, because, and we're running out of time here, but I'm interested in your thought on this. There's a good feeling that Hillary Clinton is going to potentially name Mr. Vilsack, the ag secretary, as her running mate. How would that go over?
Well, I think it would go over okay with a part of the agricultural community. Secretary Vilsack has grown into the job very well, and it would appeal to agricultural producers. I have to say, I'll be surprised if he is her vice president pick, but I know that they've been talking about it. He was an amateur in agriculture, despite the fact that he comes from the state of Iowa when he went into the post. But over the last 8 years, he's grown into it very well, and he's the last eight-year secretary we've had since Orville Freeman back in the early 1960s.
All right, Orrin, stay cool today and have a great weekend.
Thank you.